It was September 16th, 2019 was my first Udemy Effect shot. Review 4 in the afternoon, 3:30 p.m. for the boys. And, and I walked into that review room.
I'm imagining it.
And I got sat down by the supervisor and he goes, "Okay, listen, this is what we're doing. We're going to defrost this milk bottle." And so I go back to my desk and I just remember putting these up in front of me and everything went out of my brain. And I just sat there for at least 10 minutes. And the guy beside me looks over to me like this and is like, "You can do this. You can do this." And he's like, and he like literally puts my hand on the mouse and moves it over to like effects import or whatever they had. And like, just like gets the assets for me because I was so afraid.
You're listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepf and CGS Mentor Justin Mullman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
Hey everyone, I am super stoked this week because I got to talk to a good friend of mine, Kate Zagararis. She is a mid-level effects artist at Spin VFX, and she is also a mentor of our Houdini Effects program. She's worked on Nightmare Alley, Umbrella Academy, The Boys. She has been sharing a lot of her own content, a lot of her own research surrounding Houdini. Kate's also working on a couple of projects in collaboration with the scientific community, which is a great example of how you can use some of the skills that you're learning for some projects outside of the film and games industry.
Getting into VFX and animation was never my plan. Like, it was never on my radar until I think last year of high school. This is going to sound really weird, but I was never really exposed to like cartoons, animation as a kid. And it was only until I had like friends like in my secondary education who were like, "Hey, look at this really cool animation," particularly like Gravity Falls, which we were watching together as a group. I was like, I actually really like this. Why was I never shown this in my childhood? So I ended up doing like a victory lap of high school to get my arts credits. Cause at that point I was really trying to pursue the sciences. The long-term plan is that I wanted to do astrophysics. But animation kind of took over when I realized that wasn't the dream that I wanted. It was necessarily like a dream that was being kind of projected on me. And so I ended up at Humber College for 3D animation, and I very quickly realized I hated animation. I love my teachers. I love the program. I got good grades. I just hated animation. There was no way I was going to be an animator. And then I was like, "Oh, hey, maybe I'll be a modeler." And nope, not a really great modeler. Rigging was an option. I tried that. Didn't like it. Don't ever want to look at like skin a rig or do skin weights again. That was bad. I'm never doing that again. So I kind of decided it was actually by chance. I was having a really bad year in my second year of college. I just didn't know what I was going to do in my third year because in that program, you choose what you want to do. You want to specialize in things. I just was fooling around with Portal effects and Unreal Engine in animation class because, and instead of getting angry at me when I was supposed to be studying and doing my assignment, my teacher walked up to me and goes, "Well, if you really like VFX, you'll love Houdini." And I had no idea what that sentence was. I didn't know what VFX was. That was the first time I'd ever heard that word. He shows me a video of two demo reels of two people I've now met in person and worked with, actually, of their effects. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I love this. This is what I want to do." He's like, "Well, we don't teach effects in this program, so you're going to have to learn this over the summer and like do a test for us when you get back to say that you can do effects." And so for my entire summer vacation, every single day, I did effects in Houdini. So I would go out for a run. I'd jump into the software, work there for maybe 4 hours, get up, do something else, and then repeat that process every single day. Came back for my final year. They let me do effects. And that's where I graduated from in effects and with a background in compositing, and then ended up in the industry as a lighting, rendering, compositing artist for an animation company. I don't know if I could ever do lighting again, again after that job of comp work. I think that scared me off of comp. One of my first comp tasks in the industry was to roto this alien that was behind a shopping cart. So we had to take this shopping cart out of the plate, put this alien behind it. And this shopping cart passes in front of the entire camera. So every single hole has to be right.
That sounds like a nightmare. It was a nightmare. Nightmare shot.
I could never be in compositing. Then I ended up at a studio, which was my first 2D VFX job in Toronto, because it was like a smaller company. When I made the jump to larger studios after that, it was pretty much like a wake-up call of like, wow, smaller studios and studio environments are very different from like larger studio environments. And then I ended up at NBC Mr. X Toronto, which was one of the best experiences of my life career-wise, because I learned so many things and it's been my favorite team. Every kind of company that I've gone through has also impacted my work outside of VFX, where I'm kind of known for my blog work. And a lot of the science blog work actually got inspired by a studio that I actually got laid off from during the pandemic. And I was trying to process my feelings coming away from that studio. And I was just like, well, what experiences can I take away from it? And what experiences can I write about and put back into the industry as something positive? At this one studio, every single day, they had put my desk underneath one of the biggest important posters in the entire studio, which was one of their first productions, which was of The Incredible Hulk. And I was looking at it every single day. And I was just like, is there anything behind this movie? Is there any like some science, any information go into it? And, you know, you work at a studio and you want to know things about certain productions because you're fangirling, but you want to do it in a professional manner and you don't know how to do it. So I was like doing my own research on it and listening to like interviews with the supervisor on that project at that studio, and seeing like what methodologies went into that film. And I slowly realized like there was no science in that film. They were just doing the best they can. That was the first attempt at that character. And so I was like, we can put atomic science into The Incredible Hulk. Let me take a shot at it. And that's kind of where like the atomic science article for VFX came out of. It was just me getting frustrated that The Incredible Hulk has no science behind it in film.
Just trial and error.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your blog. What is it? Tell me a little bit more about the process and what you've been doing. Cause now there's like pages and pages and pages of articles. It's pretty cool. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about your blog.
So the blog has like taken so many different forms throughout the years. So how it originally got started is like, again, I was back in school and there was an assignment in our careers class where it's like, you have to build a website. And I didn't really feel like coughing up $200, but my teacher was like, if you're going to fail, you're going to fail this assignment if you don't build me a website. And so I said, fine, I'm going to build you a website. Basically, I had to create a website to market myself as an artist. And that's originally how the blog got out. And then as I was progressing through the school year, I was like, I need to organize all my notes because I don't have anybody mentoring me. I don't have any teachers who are teaching me FX. I have to be responsible and like document everything I'm learning so I can remember it. So I ended up just putting pages and pages of like clouds, that was like the original stuff that was on there, onto the site, because that was basically all the information I was learning at the time. And those got shared around a bit, and so did the cloud tutorials that followed after them. And then when I started working in the industry, that's kind of where it took like a different turn, where I was like, I still have to like document tools and things. And I think early on, like the Velomark article really took off. And so I was really like trying to prove when I was at my first effects studio, like I really should belong here. This is what I'm doing outside of work to prove that I can do the tasks here. Part of studying is that you do have to write stuff down, and there is physical application to things, but you do have to find like the perfect balance to it. So that's what it kind of was for me, taking notes and doing the physical application of my notes. Generally, the idea for me was that I'd go to work, I do like the physical application of it, and then I go home and study it and do the notes and publish an article. And that's how it was for a while. And then I ended up just getting laid off at that company during mid-pandemic. And that's when I was like, I'm really bored. I have like an entire month and a half of just nothing. So I'm just going to go back to writing. And that's kind of what happened during the pandemic. I just kind of, there's, I think, in a solid month where I was just like, every week there was like two articles being published, and that was because I didn't have a job and I was just studying what I could. Then I ended up at another wonderful company that basically didn't have a very big effects department. It was like me, the lead, who's now a supervisor, and like another artist. It was literally three people. And we had to do all these weird tasks on, like, for example, one of the shows that two of the senior people on the team were working on was Marvel's What If. So I was kind of watching them and I was like, okay, this is how we make cartoony effects. And I was like, okay, cartoon effects are actually quite difficult. So then I started writing about cartoon effects and like applying that to effects. And then my lead said to me, hey, why don't you look into crowds? Because we're going to have to do crowd sims for something. So did a whole crowds article because he asked me to do that. So, and then the greatest part about the blog is that people actually ask me questions. There was a great supervisor who's at Mavericks who reached out to me. He's like, do you have anything on eyes? And I said, no, I don't. And he's like, you should write something about eyes. And that's what the eye article happened, because he's just like, I need this. And you're the only person.
He was like taking the time to like look into something and yeah. Like do the basically like unpaid R&D, I guess. It's like, I mean, it's paid off now because I think yeah. It's helped you get yeah. other jobs. So it's, I think it's a good right. learning point for anyone watching to be like, or listening to be like, yeah, sometimes going above and beyond might lead to something else. Like it's
absolutely,
absolutely. But that's pretty funny. They're like, can you do an article on this? Cause we kind of need that work.
Yeah. It came out like a month later, probably, than he wanted, but he wasn't demanding it. It was just like, hey, do you have any, are you going to be writing anything soon? Type of thing. And then now it was like the way the articles have kind of progressed is like, I have this whole Google Drive that I have a folder in that has like what 60 odd topics that I want to talk about and that I brainstorm, or every time something comes up that I want to write about, I make a document and just make a title for it in the Google Drive and I'll come back to it. Out of coming out of massive studios, I've started to now recognize problems or common problems that show up. So I did an article for production that actually took off a while back. Basically, that came out of the fact that I kept on hearing the same complaint throughout every single office I was in, like, production doesn't know what artists do. Production doesn't know this. And I was like, well, if we're all going to complain about it and nobody's going to say anything, I might as well just write about it and see what happens. And I think I was really nervous about it because I didn't want to break any pipeline or NDAs, but I also just wanted the amount of facts that would keep it neutral and that were still available on the internet. So I had to ride the line. And it turned out quite well because I had a workmate who like no longer works at the company, but he was a producer there. And he comes up to me, he's like, that was a really good article. He's like, I shared it with our staff. And I was like, nice, that's great. It was really good because it's like, now I just see the problems or the common problems that show up. And I write articles about them. So there's always a solution there. So if there's like a junior who's like, I don't understand why I'm not getting promoted, or like, I don't understand why my renders are getting so long and I'm in trouble. Well, you have an article on it and you can read a little bit more of like how to fix your situation. It's easy to complain about problems in the VFX industry. It's harder to give people solutions for problems, or like you have to be in a state of mind where if someone presents you a problem or complaint about a problem, you have to say, well, here's a solution. I know the solution. I don't know the solution. I can look into it. Or you can just complain with them or say, yeah, it's a bad situation we're in. So now that's kind of the other aspect of the blog. I still will do science articles and I still want to, but I'm just like taking a break from it right now because it's just so many, there's just so many stuff going on. Like, yeah, that's kind of where the blog is now. But yeah, it's really grown out of, I don't want to say it's out of control, but it's massive and it's kind of impressive in a way. So
very impressive. I'm really happy with it. Very impressive. Like you're like, kind of, it's like, no. It's very impressive. And I like how it's evolved. I don't think I realized that it started so early, like while you're still in school. So that's really cool to learn. But I wanted to touch on one thing that you just mentioned briefly, is this idea of helping people who are in production or current artists and stuff like that, about like, oh, this is why it's going wrong, or this is how you can sort of help yourself. So tell me a little bit more about that, and how you've been trying to guide people that you work with or other people in the industry via your articles about how they can move up in their careers. So I think we can all agree that like getting that first shot is like the hardest thing ever, like getting that first job. Like even you didn't get exactly the job you wanted right away in effects, like you did lighting and comp. You're like, oh my God, I hate this. I think something that we don't talk about enough is how to then like keep moving, because it's not over with the first job. The first job is just that first step, and it's usually not the dream job. So what are some of your tips for people who are looking to move up? Like maybe they've already gotten that job, but they're maybe a little bit unhappy, or they're not feeling recognized, which is a huge problem, especially at big companies. You just kind of get lost in the mix, and it's show after show after show. Yeah, tell me a little bit more about that and how you've been kind of mentoring people within the industry.
I think the best way anybody can mentor anybody is to like, I think usually around like year three is when you really start to look back and you're like, wow, I made a lot of mistakes. Like there was like socially or, you know, professionally or like art wise. And you start going, oh gosh, like, was I a failure? Why am I here? Like it really starts to kick in. And I think that perspective of looking back actually can help you mentor other people, because you know exactly the mistakes you made. You now know the solutions. And so it's like sharing those solutions and the mistakes of people, because people will see problems before they see the solution. So if you share the problem and the solution, people will say, well, I recognize that problem because like Kate encountered that when she was like a junior, but this is how she dealt with it. Like that's kind of what you need to do if you're mentoring someone, and be like, this is always a common problem, and this is always some common solutions for it. There's always a point, like, and I've noticed this in myself, where you recognize that you're not a junior anymore, and you go, oh, if I know I'm not a junior, does everyone else know that I'm not a junior? And that it gets into like a very weird position when you're at that point in work where you're going, well, I'm not doing like, you know, junior work anymore, but I'm definitely not doing lead work, but I still have that title that says junior, and it's bugging me, and I don't know what to do about it. And I don't know how to move forward with that. And that's when you should start kind of reassessing, like, and like, how am I building things? Am I optimizing my builds? Am I cleaning everything? If someone's going to open up this file and take a look at it and judge me on this file, if I should move forward and be promoted or not, does it represent who I am as an artist or something like that? Like, can you keep everything tidy and organized? Can someone open it up and not feel overwhelmed? The other thing is, as a junior who wants to be an intermediate, you have to really be in communication with your department head or production manager, department manager. And you have to kind of say to them, like, can I get a contract review? Can I sit down? Can I talk with you? And if you want to like open up a file and like judge my work, this is the best shot to look at. It's one I'm proud of. I don't want to say don't trust the system, but don't put your trust in the system that everybody knows exactly what you're doing all the time, because it's always impossible for someone to be monitored 24/7 of what they're doing in the office or what they're creating, right? Or what shows they're helping out with. Because like there's a lot of uncredited artists on every production. And you may have helped out with one or two of them offhand. If someone's like, hey, we really like those caches you did for blank, can you put them, like pass them over to our show so we can use them? That sometimes happens, and you'll be like, whoa, I accidentally did a shot on this show because they borrowed something from another one. And then you might not get the credit because they borrowed it from you, right? It's like you have to be like very communicative about what you're doing, what shows you're helping. Like state that if you have a morning scrum with your team, and so everybody knows at some point what you're doing. It's kind of just about communication and keeping track, basically accountability in yourself when it comes to building things. That's like always my first go-to when I kind of tell someone if they're complaining about, hey, I really feel like I need to move on. You do need to like always ask them, hey, have you talked to so-and-so about this yet? Have you like kept track of the shots that you're proud of that you want on your demo reel? Does like the HOD know that you did these shots for this? So there's like things like that I always ask first. And then I get into the other stuff that might be going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point. Just because even from a production standpoint, it's like these big studios and small ones too, there's so much data. It's like we're keeping track of so many different things at once between budgets and tasks and schedules and like how long someone like you might be working on something and which shots they're working on. But there's so much information that no one's really thinking about, like, how does Kate feel today? Or like, what's Kate's best shot? You know what I mean? Out of all the things she's done in the past 6 months, or, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not those things. Like the information might be there if you ask the right questions, but it's not like an idea that's floating around in people's heads on a daily basis. So I think that's like fantastic advice for sure. And even your managers, I used to say this all the time to my friends, they have their own careers, you know, like, yes, it's their job to like manage you and like be your mentor, like, you know, your manager and to watch you. But they're probably also thinking about their own growth, you know, yeah. They're not sitting at the dinner table being like, I wonder how Kate feels today. It's like, no, they're thinking about themselves and like whether their manager is noticing what they're doing.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to CG Spectrum for helping make this podcast happen.
CG Spectrum is an online animation, VFX, digital painting, and game development school that prepares you for a career in film and games. Whether you're just starting out or you're upgrading your skills, get personalized career training and mentorship from industry pros who have worked on blockbuster films and best-selling games. Courses are 100% online, and you can choose from one-on-one private mentorship options or group classes with just 4 students max. You'll also get access to career support services and join an awesome community full of like-minded creatives just like you. Learn more at cgspectrum.com. We're bringing the industry to you. Do you find that you've gotten typecast in certain roles? Like, has that helped you or like prevented you from moving up? Like, did you feel like, oh, I feel stuck or something?
I've definitely reached the point where like, I think there's been moments and recent moments in my career where I feel like I've been typecast for certain effects where it's just like, I did one really good thing on one project. I did some clouds for Raised by Wolves season 2. And I had 3 supervisors in one day walk up to my desk and be like, we really liked your clouds. Can we borrow them on another show? And I was like, oh, this is great. And then I just became known as a cloud girl. And so I did like a lot of clouds. In like Raised by Wolves, like I just remember like looking at all the shot work I got back from that show, and I was like, I did a lot of cloud shots. That was a lot of clouds. It's also kind of my fault in a way where I feel like sometimes it's my fault where I put out what 8 tutorials on clouds, and then I had like 3 articles on clouds. Of course, people were going to assume that I was really good at clouds. I'm not saying I'm not, but it's, you definitely reach a point where you're like, please, anything but a clap. I don't want to do it. Please, no more. And it was, for me, if you're ever in that situation, you need to go to your department manager or production manager on the project you are on and say, listen, I really enjoyed this. It was a lot of fun, but this is where I'm coming from. I've been doing the same thing for 6 months. And I really need to look at something different. Can I do a particle effect? Can I do a debris sim? Ask for always a different simulation type than what you're doing. And you will immediately like feel a lot better because you're going to be like expanding your skill set with different tools if you choose different solver types. And so now I'm more of pyrotechnics, where I deal with pyrotechnics a lot. Like dusts and explosions and fire and things like that. And it's mainly because I did clouds first. So it kind of paid off in a way where it's just like working with volumes and understanding where attributes can fit into volumes and be processed in them. And then I moved on to pyrotechnics, and I can like, I know exactly which disturbance value I should start at now. and then have like a default range in the back of my head where I can say, okay, this is how much detail I should add in automatically off the top of my head if I know that my voxel size is this and this is the velocity of the object coming in that I'm using as an emitter, things like that. So it's kind of beneficial for sometimes if you get typecast and you're doing the same thing for 6 months. I would say definitely after 4 months, if you're doing the same thing, start asking for new work, because you're going to feel really bored and you're going to be like, is this the job for me? Should I leave because I'm doing the same thing over and over again? And maybe it's because you need to ask for something different. So always ask like your production manager, hey, can I do something new? I know I'm still a junior, or I know I'm intermediate, but this is what I've been doing for 6 months. I'm not asking for like a full CGI shot where I have to simulate everything in the shot, but I'm asking for something manageable, and just come from like that perspective. And that definitely helps.
How do you feel kind of reconciling those two feelings? Because you mentioned like at first it was like, oh, it feels so good to be recognized for something that you're good at. And you're like, yes, yeah. Like, I am good at this. And like starting something new, I imagine you're kind of like back down at that level where you don't know as much about it anymore. And you're like, you're not as good at it, maybe. What would you almost prefer, to be like an expert at something or someone who's like kind of good at a lot of things? Like, I know I would struggle to like move on to something else if I felt really like comfortable in a certain place. So like, how do you deal with like comfort versus challenge?
I would say I'm still really good at clouds. Like, I love clouds, and I'm trying to create a whole volumetric toolkit so I never have to do them again. So like, I still am keeping up that energy elsewhere, but it's like coming from like that area where you're like, I'm really wanted because I can do this one thing really well. And I know how to like process it in a way that can be handled by the lighting department so we can get absolutely like amazing factors into these setups. And you're like, wow, I'm not even a lead yet, but I'm really good at this one thing. And like, it gives you a little bit of an ego boost. And sometimes you need that, sometimes you don't. And it's always, but then I find like, I would say like the reason I was saying like 4 months then ask for something new is usually because around that marker of like 3 to 4 months kind of starts to hit you that maybe I'm really good at this one thing, but I'm not good at anything else. And then that's when that self-doubt kind of creeps in and you're like, maybe I'm not a good effects artist. Maybe I'm a one-trick pony. Like, I don't want to, like, maybe that's the only reason I have my job. And you start overthinking and spiraling and all this other stuff. And that's really the only thing to prevent that from spiraling is really to ask for something new that you're afraid of. I always like to do one thing a day that scares me, or do one thing new a day that I haven't had, like, that I can try and accomplish something towards, even if it's like doing laundry. It's like, I did one thing today. Yeah, it's kind of like figuring the moment where you should move on is like, I think the hardest part is like, where should I move on? When should I move on? So like, if you're someone who handles numbers or dates, well, I just always say like 3 to 4 months is usually the zone where you start to have self-doubt over the effects you're really good on. And just start to ask for something new. Just draw the hard line, push yourself over it, and ask for something that you're afraid of. When I first got into VFX, I was terrified that I wasn't good enough, and I wasn't. I remember one of the reasons I have my first shot on my arm from The Boys, which is like right here, is because I was terrified of it. This is how afraid I was. The date is like in my head. It was September 16th. 2019 was my first Houdini effect shot, review 4 in the afternoon, 3:30 p.m. for The Boys. And, and I walked into that review room.
I'm imagining it.
And I got sat down by the supervisor and he goes, okay, listen, this is what we're doing. We're going to defrost the smoke bottle. And he didn't tell me it was milk. So I was like, that's a really weird fluid. And so he didn't tell me anything about the plot. And so I go back to my desk And I remember opening up Houdini and all like the training, the studio that had like a very limited amount of training, but I thought I was competent before I got that shot. I just remember Houdini's up in front of me and everything went on my brain. And I just sat there for at least 10 minutes. And the guy beside me looks over to me like this and is like, "You can do this. You can do this." And he's like, and he like literally puts my hand on the mouse and moves it over to like effects import or whatever they had. And like, just like gets the assets for me because I was so afraid. And I have a friend who like, yeah, I'm a very close coworker now. And he was there in the room, like at the other opposite desk, like watching this happen. And he's like, "You can do it. You can do it. Trust me, you can do it." It was just like that encouragement of like, "Don't worry, you're afraid, but you're going to do this really well. Like, even if you fail, you can start over." And so I really was really fortunate. Like, I had those two people at the time who were just like, "Don't worry, like, it's your first shot and you're scared and you're like, I wasn't even talking, but they knew I was terrified." And they just got me through that task and they got me to a point where I could do it on my own and reapply those like attributes and effects to other objects and other things that came down the pipeline as well. It was literally like a really good moment to be terrified, because the moment I was scared, there was other people there to help me. So that's another reason why I kind of say it's okay to be afraid, because other people will assist you if something goes wrong.
Yeah, like you're never fully alone in these scenarios, I guess. And I think honestly, that's why it's so hard to be a student sometimes. Like, I feel so bad for students because they are a little bit more alone. And in reality, they're not, because there's like usually some kind of resources. There's other students who you can talk to. There's teachers, there's mentor, you know. But I think as a student, you're less likely to like turn to the side and be like, "Hey, can you help me?" You kind of have to actually seek it out. Whereas when you're in a studio, and you're lucky that that was still before COVID, that must be so hard for people starting now remotely to not have that person seeing you physically, like kind of frozen. And to be like, "Let me help you." Like, I truly don't know how people are doing that now. It must be so, so hard. Yeah, it's so important to have those people to be like, "Hey, yeah, don't worry. We got this." But I love that you remember that, like, down to the minute. That's wild.
Yeah, it was just that amount of fear just kind of put it back. Like, it was just, I was so afraid, because everyone throughout that day was like, "They won't give you any work. It's your first day." And I was like, "Okay, cool. I'll just learn the pipeline, talk to people, see what's going on." And then my name gets called and I'm like, "Uh-oh, okay, here we go.
We're going in."
And it was a little bit overwhelming. And it was also overwhelming for me as well, because I was the first, I think, female on that team in the effects ever in that studio at the time. And so I remember just walking on the first day and everyone was like, "You're the first girl who's ever worked here." Like, and I was like, so I had that like added pressure. I was like, like, I gotta fit in, I gotta represent, I gotta do my work. It was an overwhelming amount of like fear that was in me, but you know what? It turned out okay. Like, that's okay. It's always okay to be afraid. And I don't think people hear that too often. Like, it's okay. Like, being afraid is being an effects artist. Every single day, we're afraid this project is going to go overdue, or like, we're going to miss a delivery. And it usually happens sometimes. I don't want to say usually, but sometimes it happens. And you always have to like, sometimes you're always on the edge of your feet going, I know this is going to happen. You're just waiting for a mistake to go up. And it's okay to be afraid of us.
I think you were correct when you said usually things don't go as planned. That's true. Like, every single project, and I'm sure this is true for like TV shows, movies, probably even games, like even commercial projects, like nothing ever, ever ends up being like 100% exactly how it was planned in some meeting 3 months ago or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, nothing is ever exactly the same. The schedule might change. Maybe there's a few hours here or a few days or a few weeks, or this affect, or maybe they didn't shoot it how they thought it would be shot, and that now affects your job as an artist because you have to like recreate it in a different way that like you weren't expecting, and or how the supervisor had planned it originally and they didn't do it that way. Like that happens all the time, so it's never completely on you. Like, yeah, I wish I could go back in time and just like be like, it's okay. You know, to like everyone I've ever worked with and whatever, but people figure it out on their own, I guess. Do you think that you really had to work extra hard because you had like the pressure of like not just being a new artist, but like also, and like people told you, they're like, you're the first woman here. That's such a mind fuck to be like, like, I didn't want the pressure of that, but now you just put it on me because you just brought it up. So like, do you think that that has shaped you in any way or like changed your perspective and how you approach your job every day? Like, I hate it because I don't want to have to do that, but obviously we do.
I would say looking back, there was like a lot of pressure because again, it was like my first like effects job out of school. It wasn't my first industry job. Like when I was working in like lighting, rendering, comp, we had a lot of ladies on the team. I think our lighting and comp lead, she's a wonderful lady. And I don't know how she's still keeping it together, but she is, because that was a interesting studio to work at. But like, when I got into effects and I walked into that studio, no one had told me, like I had kind of gone into that studio blind where it's like, I didn't really know anybody like at that studio either. Besides my teacher, actually Alizgar, who had worked there, he had said, oh yeah, it's a great studio. And he hadn't really told me anything other than like, he had come into class and he had been like, here's the trailer for like X-Men. I did the effects for Nightcrawler. That's my work in the trailer. And that's as much as I knew about that studio, was his Nightcrawler effect in the trailer. And I was like, wow, I got to work in there. So I went in blind, and it kind of, that's the other lesson my takeaway from it was like, I went in blind. I didn't do my research and I didn't know people who could help me and tell me things. And so when I had like half the studio tell me, oh, you're the first woman in the effects department ever in this studio's history, I was like, and there's only other been one other woman in the 3D department. I was like, okay. I don't know what I'm doing. Like I kind of felt a little bit overwhelmed. And like, it was really funny because we used to joke in like the old building for that studio where like everybody had, there was like these little corner wall offices where it's groups of four. And like, there was one section when my group of the three people around me were all on vacation. And then there was the group of four effects artists in the other corner, and they're like, no girls allowed, like, because it was just like the one girl corner and the boys are over there. And so it was like, there were humorous jokes like that, which were kind of funny, but then it was also kind of like, I didn't know if I should stand up for myself because like I was the only woman in that department, if I needed to prove myself. I didn't know anything about like how I should stand up for myself because I was like the first person there and there was no like standard to set. And so I would just like, I better be quiet and just smile because I don't know what I'm doing. Cause I have that junior experience of, I've never worked up in live action at that point either. I'd just worked in the animation industry. So it was just like kind of coping with all the environments at once. And it did leave like some like lasting stress that up until recently, like, didn't go away because I was like, I need to stand up for myself now because I came out of a situation like that where I was dealing with everything all at once. It was kind of relieving to like come out of a situation where I was like the only female artist on the team to like a studio I was at now, where when I walked in through the doors of like Mr. X Toronto, there was like six women on our team at the time. And I was blown away by that. And I was like, wow, these are so great. But we were at the height of the pandemic, so I didn't get to meet them in person. So I was a little bit disappointed by that. It was really nice to be on a team where like I would sit in meetings and I think, and there would be like other, like during effects scrums of all things, like it was something very, very normal. And then these ladies would be like, I did this shot and it sucks and I did a bad job and we're doing it again today. And the effects production manager would be like, okay. Keep going. Like there was no, it just felt like they were one of the guys. And it was really relaxing to know that I could say something was going terribly wrong and they wouldn't judge me because of my gender or anything like that. We worked on The Adam Project, which is now on Netflix. And there was this really tough shot where like this plane is like shooting the cliff faces. And I was overwhelmed by that shot. And like, it was great to have a female artist just come into the rescue and say, this is how I can fix it. I'm going to take over for a bit and then we're going to put you back on the shot. And I was like, awesome. So it was like a really great moment where like, it was really supportive that I had those ladies in that environment who could be like really, really helpful. And I looking back on my career, I was like, I wish I had that. Like just off the bat, like I wish there would had been like a lady there who was like, even if they never helped me out, they were just in the background doing the same thing going, I did a bad job today, but I'm doing it again. Like it's doing it again. I'm going to fix the problem. Like I just, it made a difference for me. And it definitely changed my mindset just coming out of situations where I was the only woman on the team. And like, I'm always excited when I enter a new studio and someone tells me, hey, there's like four other women on the team. And I'm like, yes, this is great. Because it's like, I always like to see how they're reacting to things. And I'm not going to cut men out of this too, because like one of my biggest mentors in this industry, he is a man. And he's actually my current HOD. He's like just done some amazing work. Like I walked into Mr. X Toronto and I was like, wow, like I used your tutorials in a previous studio. And I remember my first interaction with him in person because he had known me out of my blog work and I had known him out of his tutorials. So he walked out of his office. My desk is like right beside his desk. And he stops and he looks at me and he doesn't say anything. I look at him. I don't say anything. And there's like this awkward pause and he just nods and he goes back to his office. I like having a balance between like male and female mentors and effects because I think it's really healthy. And it does like cultivate an environment where like everybody can learn from each other and they don't feel afraid to ask questions because they think, oh, I might be coming from a place and no one understands or something like that. And even if it's like the smallest thing, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it doesn't have to be a gendered thing, but like, I like asking, cause yeah, sometimes like we can't help it. We do feel awkward when we feel like the only one or that people don't like get where we're coming from or they put assumptions on us. It's funny. Cause you said like, oh, people were like, you know, you're the only girl here. Or like, you know, you're the first one here. And like, it's all this like you, as if like you had any control in who they had hired before you. It's like, yeah, I am the first one. Why is that? You know what I mean? Like,
it
should be like, they should feel awkward about this. Not us.
Yeah.
When you think about it, I love that you had like done the tutorials of your HOD and like, it's come full circle. He's also seen your blog posts. How do you feel about that? Like, do you ever feel like, oh my God, like, why are they even reading my stuff? Like, that like moment, like that's wild. Like, I know you're awesome. And like, obviously they're looking at it for a reason, but you know, it's not like you've been in the industry for 20 years yet. You know, so like, how does that feel?
Yeah. Cause like, it's scary. It's like, cause I feel like anybody could do what I'm doing and I hate saying this, but like I have a lot more to achieve and I'm 24 years old. Like I have a lot more things that are going to happen next probably. And it, like, as soon as I say I'm 24, people go, what? Like I've had, what, why? And I'm like, I don't know. I was born in 97. I don't know. it's been weird. Like I've had awkward moments I wouldn't say awkward, but it's been funny moments where I did a post on Neutron Stars a while back and HOD comes out of his office like, I read your post on Neutron Stars. Cool. And then they go back to work. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I gotta be quiet, not name drop anything or do any, like there's, you know, like it's interesting when you do blog work or you do tutorials because you work with people in your studio who will use those things or come across it recently. So you always have to be a little bit careful because you always have to keep in mind, I am working with everybody who might use this or read this or, you know, come across it in the future. So if you really want to say something controversial, you really have to phrase it correctly. You always have to think twice about what you're writing. For me, what I do is I write everything in a Google Doc. And then I read through it once and I usually like, I usually like to write like a paragraph a day, so I can reread that one paragraph and rephrase it if I need to. Or if I have sections in an article, I'll only write one section a day so I can rephrase that section. And then by the time it gets up on my website, it's already gone through like three drafts. And so in the way I'm like trying to phrase things, not necessarily grammar, because I know I've screwed up now and then with that. But it's like you always have to make sure you're very, very clear about what you want to say. So when you get back into the office, like nothing bad happens.
Do you find that because of your age, like you feel a little bit stronger when it comes to imposter syndrome or like people even taking you seriously, or you're like,
no,
past that?
I do have a lot of imposter syndrome, and I do feel like sometimes because I'm so young, like I've had a few people say, oh, how old are you? Because like I've had a few people say, I thought you were like 28 or 29, and I'm like, no, I'm 24. Like,
I would have never guessed, to be honest. Yeah. I was just like, she's doing cool work. Like, I don't, I didn't even think twice about it.
I'm only an intermediate artist. So I'm always studying things. I'm never going to reach a point where I say, I'm the best artist in the world. I'm not. I don't think you should ever say that. Anyone should say that. Like, I was in an interview a few months ago where I think the people interviewing me thought like, oh, this must be a senior artist, like someone who's been in the industry a while. And I had to very much clarify, like, I'm at year 4-ish of the industry, and I'm not like 8 years or 12 years or anything. I'm very young. But I will tell you if I don't have an answer to that question. I had to do that several times. And I think they were okay with the fact that I was admitting where my faults were. But you should also be like, when it comes to imposter syndrome, at least for me, like I do have to kind of remind myself, like, even if I don't know something, I still can't say like, oh, I can't keep saying this on, oh, I'm not good enough because I don't know this one thing. Like I've been in situations where I've always said, yeah, I know I'm not good enough, but I haven't clarified what I'm not good enough at. And so that's because I'm like, well, I don't want to say that I'm amazing. Like, and then that's kind of where my imposter syndrome comes in, where it's just like, I don't want to overpromote myself. I'm happy to share information, but I don't want to promote who I am because I don't want to get cocky. And that's kind of where it's kind of mixing in for me anyways.
Well, I like how you're approaching it, because it sounds more like, here's the information I know. Do with it what you will. Like, this is where I'm coming from. I'm not claiming to be anything. And I think that's why I was interested in you to begin with as well, because I was like, wow, like she's doing all this stuff, but hasn't been around forever. But it's just this idea of knowledge sharing. And I think that you don't have to necessarily be the best of the best to share information. It's just like, here's what I found today. Are we going to find other solutions that are better in the future or a different way of doing things? I'm sure. Like, do you have any other kind of practical tips for people who are thinking of getting into the industry? Like, is there anything that, like, if you could go back in time and sort of like meet yourself without ruining the like space-time continuum, like, what would you tell yourself, you know, if you could go back to the beginning right before you got your first job?
I don't, you know what, I've asked, I know I have an answer for this
real question. Hard-hitting questions over here.
If I could go back in time, what's funny is like, I did ask myself this question a while back and I sat about it and I thought about it and I did come up with an answer. I'm trying to remember what that was. I think at the beginning, if I had to go back, it was just like, I know you're terrified of everything and I know where you're coming out of, like, because I didn't have a really good start. Like, I was going through a lot of stuff. Like, the first week of my industry experience, my grandpa actually passed away. So it was like the very first day I come home and my mom's like, grandpa's in the hospice. And so that was my first week. And so I was still, I was like so overwhelmed with work. I wasn't processing grief. And I remember that led into me being shy and like avoiding questions, or if I was in an awkward situation where it's like, maybe I knew someone liked me in the office, I wouldn't say anything or shy away from it. Right. Or like say, hey man, back off a little bit. So I would kind of say like, I would have told myself, you know, take time off and take time off for yourself, because I was just powering through. I felt like I needed to prove to people what I was doing. I had didn't know what questions to ask. I didn't know how to think properly for VFX. So I was like, I would have told myself, like, find somebody who can teach you how to ask the questions that you'd ask, and then also take time off so you can process events and process like all this new information that you're learning. Because I didn't take time off. I was like, I think the first year of my industry experience, I was like doing tremendous amounts of overtime as well. There was one week I remember it clocked in at like 74 hours. And it was crazy. And not to count, like at the time I was like commuting 3 hours into Toronto and then 3 hours back. So it was on top of blog work. So I was just overwhelmed and I was exhausted. And so I would have told myself, like, take time off if you're like doing all of that. Like, you need it even as a junior. You don't need to prove yourself. You can have a long weekend. It's fine. And I did have people at the time who were telling me to take time off. And I was like, I can do this. I can do this. And they're like, okay, well, you kind of need to. Like, it's not a sign of weakness if you need time off, or if you need time to recover from something or things like that. Because I have a policy with myself where it's like, I like the fact that I can have a vacation day where I can schedule once. I like take a Friday off once every month, and I have a long weekend once every month. And that's kind of my treat to myself. And I've now way more relaxed because I can do that and just admit to myself, like, I need that time to just hang with my cat and not do anything.
Yeah, like, you don't even have to go away sometimes. Just like taking time for yourself. It just comes back to that human element of things. Like, we're not machines. We use machines for work every day. But we can't, like, you know, we can't keep up with that ourselves. It's just not sustainable. It's so hard because I think as a junior, especially, there's so much pressure to like keep going and like prove yourself. And you know what? You're going to say that now in this interview, and people are still going to like not take breaks, I think. But hopefully like one person listens or someone listens, you know. But I think it's very common when you're starting out to just like push yourself too hard because you just don't know anything else and you don't want to lose this opportunity that you just worked so hard to get to. Before we finish, I just wanted to touch really quickly on, so I wanted to talk about this so much, but we've just been talking about so many amazing things. Tell me a little bit more about how you got into more of your like side work with you're doing some scientific projects, you're working with the medical community. How did you even like fall into that? How did that happen? And how do you have the time? I mean, don't answer that last one, but like, how did you get into that?
So yeah, it kind of just started because like VFX was also in animation weren't originally in the plan. Like, I always had a really strong science background as like a kid and everything. So I wanted to be, and this is true, an astronaut until I was in grade 11, but then life happened. So it was always there in the background. I always thought medical rendering, I hated medical rendering. It would look so boring to me. And just like the medical renderings of like particles that you see in the ROM, where it's like graphics from like 1997 that are just like a circle, 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 circle. Look at this circle go together. I was like, that looks boring and I'm never going to do that. And now I'm building a medical visualization tool set for like proteins in the human body, which is not where I thought I'd end up. But this tool set, like I'm doing now, my end goal, if I can get this information, is like, I want to get visualized proteins. I want to be able to do protein solves in Houdini. So right now it's just programming Houdini and programming a tool set that can bring in like protein information, atomical information, ionic information about particles, and actually have it ready when the user opens up those HDAs, and then visualizing the bigger structures. And then my current idea now is like, if I can visualize the biggest structures of a protein, then I can visualize the smallest structures of a protein. And I saw, I think, this wonderful artist, forget his name, but he did this wonderful demonstration in Houdini, how like you could visualize like a quantum field through a visualizer in Houdini through color. And I was like, maybe if I'm visualizing these proteins and the atoms and I can, and the different elements, maybe I can work myself even lower to like quarks, and we can actually put in like quantum fields and that information into Houdini. So we like have a tool that shows the largest and the smallest information to the largest. And that's kind of like where my tool set is probably going to end up. Hopefully it's going to take years, most likely. Because I do have to take months off from it to recover, because it's just crunch, 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 crunch. And there's so much information to program into it. You can download it for free off my website or with the Grid Markets, because they're very into what I'm doing right now. That's kind of how the science progressed. It was like articles. Then it was meeting people like Catalina, who does like visualizations down the States for NASA, teaching with her at Houdini School. And then just talking to people like Andrew Lowell, who are like, I love what you write about. This is what I'm doing down in the States for Hubble. And then it was just, he's been amazing to talk to for me personally, because I feel like I'm name dropping here. I'm really not trying to. I'm going to highlight.
No, but it's, I think it's like important to name drop, because that's where you get inspiration from. Like, someone out there is name dropping you. Like, you know, that's a good thing.
Yeah. So he was like, especially Andrew, he was just great, because he was just like, hey, this past year, he was like, you really like science stuff, and I do a lot of teaching, and you do a lot of teaching. So would you like to teach Vex and Python? Because that goes into the science visualization toolkits a lot in Houdini. That really was a great pushing point for me, because it kind of forced me to reassess Python and Vex and HDAs and things like that. So I could teach these kids like Python and Vex and be confident about it. But it also fed back into my work. So I would say like the whole reason why I'm continuing the science path is A, because it's turned into a hobby, but also my other hobbies like teaching have really fed into it, because you have students and teachers who are kind of doing the same thing, and they're just like giving you positive reinforcement or testing things for you, or like, oh, wow, like didn't know this is possible in the software. And they'll mention a tidbit of information and you're like, oh, wait, I should build that into the tool set, or I should research that. And so it's been a mixture of like what the Houdini community wants to know and what they want to learn and what I want to learn, and like how we can kind of overall learn together. I don't even view it as a science opportunity or a job or a hobby. It's like more of a teaching position hobby, because that's kind of what it feels like. Cause there's so many people in this industry who just love science, who want to be a part of science in some way, or, you know, we're sidetracked from their scientific path into a VFX. I know a guy personally who has like, I think he, as he put it to me, because he was one of my students, he goes, I am the only man in the world with like two like astrophysics degrees, and I'm specialized in like mantra rendering. And I was like,
that's so cool.
Like, what else do you do? And he's like, I do renderings for this. And he told me, I was like, am I in for this like government agency? And I was like, am I in trouble? Why are you in my class?
But I think that's like so important. Like, thinking back to when I was in school and like some of the subjects I struggled with. And like you mentioned, like going to like a museum or like the Ontario Science Center or something like that, and you see these like older kind of graphics, and it makes it less interesting. And I think it's so important to combine like the art world and like, you know, all of that training that you have, and like the eye for something that looks good and how to like represent something. I think the visual effects and gaming industries are really good at like storytelling. And even though you don't really like compare science with storytelling very often, I think it, in order to get people interested in it or to teach something or to show them like this is how it works, like, and I don't know anything about these like proteins and things that you're talking about, so like I'm sorry, but I imagine that it would have been so much more helpful for those people who are learning or people who are trying to like progress those fields to see it and to see it better, so that they can like wrap their heads around it, or, you know, so I think it's so important that you're doing that work, and it's so cool that you've managed to go back to that passion of yours. Well, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure talking with you, Kate. Let us know where to find you. Where can we find you online?
You can find me at katezagararis.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. If you have trouble spelling my last name, you can just write Kate X VFX and I should be the first one that pops up. You can find me on YouTube and also Discord. We have a scientific design and Houdini Discord going strong. So you can check me out there. And that should be it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kate, and I will see you around.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. For more on this episode, visit us at cgspectrum.com/podcast. Check out our show notes where you'll find links to our guests and more behind the scenes. And if you're enjoying the show, please like, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening, or share this episode with someone who might like it. See you next time.